Hello everyone, I'm KL Mary.
And I'm Soda.
And we're part of the podcast team at Space Trio, which basically means we're people who love Star Trek and really, really love the Star Trek original series characters Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. Because this is our first podcast, we're going to keep discussions high level. But don't worry, as we continue to produce podcasts, we're going to cover a gamut of interesting topics over the coming months. So, that said, what do you say, Soda? Do we just jump right in?
I think so. Do you want to introduce yourself first?
Okay, I'll go first. So, I'm KL Mary, as I said. I have been part of the Star Trek fandom for about 8 years now. I originally came into the fandom by watching the Star Trek 2009 film, which I will just call The Spark. Because after that, I immediately wanted to know more about Star Trek itself, and so I went back and watched the original series, which is what I'm going to call The Hook, because watching the original series through the first season is what made me appreciate Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. At that point, I finished the series, I finished all the original series movies that came after that, and then I kind of went on a dive into the internet to find out everything I could about these three men and what it was that made them work so well together. So basically, that's me. I recorded an introductory podcast before this one, which is a little more colorful and gives a better idea of why I started Space Trio in the first place. That said, Soda, do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, hello. I'm Soda. I came into this fandom about 2 years ago. The first episode I watched, I was actually in university, and one of my professors showed an episode in class. And when I was planning to watch the original series anyway at some point, but after I watched this episode, I realized I have to watch it immediately. And I started watching it since then, and I fell in love with all the campiness and the 60s and everything about it. And I especially love the three main characters. And I wanted to find a community of people who love them as much as I do. And I found it.
That's a really great story, Soda.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Well, I actually kind of want to ask you questions about it, but clearly I can't.
You can, why not?
Because it'll take more than 5 minutes. So, moving on, who are the triumvirate? I think that's a very interesting word, because what it really means is a group of three individuals holding power. I think originally it was used for like three men who were in charge of a political regime or had some sort of powerful alliance. But it's used more in the general sense to describe Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, because they are sort of three powers that run the ship. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I think that's an accurate assessment. They are like the three heads of a Hydra.
That is a great analogy. I will tell you, I'm not really sure how the word triumvirate came to be associated with Kirk, Spock, McCoy outside of the fact that they are those three men in power. I suspect that it was probably a fan who started calling them that, in kind of the way that the pairing names get popularized today, that it just became attached to how we think of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
It's possible, but you know, I don't think people in fandom actually give much of a thought for the origin of the word, or that they care very much. It's very obvious when you watch the show that they are the three people that usually get a say in the decisions, Kirk being the captain, obviously, but Spock and McCoy usually get a say in. He always consults them, so it fits.
It's actually, that's a very good point. When we get to the next section and talk about Roddenberry's triad. I think we'll get into some detail about why it is that Kirk listens to both Spock and McCoy in his decision making, and therefore it seems like they are united, the three who basically decide how to run the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Kirk, being the captain, is the one who is responsible for everyone on the ship, including Spock and McCoy.
Yes, but it's interesting that the first officer is usually responsible. I mean, the captain is responsible, obviously, but the first officer seems to have more responsibilities in the day-to-day runnings of the ship. For regards to the crew.
Yes, he does, because the captain is the base.
He's the big picture guy.
He's the big picture guy, so he doesn't necessarily get in the details unless there's something that needs to be reported to him. So as his second in command, Spock is running the day-to-day of the ship. And I think it's actually said that McCoy reports to Spock, even though he happens to be the chief medical officer and runs his own department, life sciences. Life sciences comes under sciences as a whole, and just for the fact that McCoy is a lieutenant commander, he is basically, Spock is his senior, and in some fashion he is responsible for reporting.
It's true, but it's also important to remember that McCoy, being the chief medical officer, in several episodes he knows that he has the power to actually tell the captain and the first officer what to do in case he rules them incompetent psychologically or medically.
He does. As the chief medical officer, he is an independent agent.
Mm-hmm.
While Spock's is basically to see to the day-to-day running of the ship, McCoy is to oversee the welfare of every crewman on the ship, ironically including himself.
And ironically including those that are above him.
Yes. So if we really just kind of looked at each of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy at a high level, let's start with Kirk. Kirk is, I think, arguably one of the most decorated, perhaps one of the most famous captains in Starfleet. And it's basically assumed that when he starts his captaincy of the Enterprise, which he takes over from Captain Pike, he's going to be...
Does it take it over from Captain Pike? Is it really stated that Pike was the previous officer before Kirk? He was there 10 years before Kirk. I don't know if he kept being the captain exactly after it. I don't remember.
It is.
Hmm. Okay.
The transfer is done in 2265. I think where I was going with that, Soda, is that Kirk is only 32 when he takes over the captaincy of the Enterprise.
Yeah, the youngest captain in his time.
That is correct. And Spock was actually a science officer on the Enterprise prior to Kirk taking captaincy. He had been with Captain Pike for about 11 years. And if you do the math, Spock is actually 35 when Kirk takes over the captaincy.
He's older than Kirk, actually, and it's possible he's been serving. I don't think he's served longer than Kirk, however. I think Kirk got into the academy around 16 and Spock at 18 or 19. And
yeah, that's
so
correct.
Spock he's older than Kirk, but he served for but Kirk for a longer time.
Yeah, and so if you look at it from that perspective, Spock is actually, it's his first gig as first officer.
True.
Under Kirk.
Spock's background. Spock's background is the background we know most about, because he just took over the whole franchise. Spock, he was supposed to, you know, get into this Vulcan Science Academy. And he decided, it was never explained in the original series why he decided not to go there. I think in the new movies, he has some explanation, right?
Yes. In the new movies, he was going to be one of the first members to join the Vulcan Science Academy, and he had always felt at odds with being only half Vulcan and different from his peers. And so when he was basically confronted with the choice of joining the Academy, he decided that he couldn't work alongside the Vulcans, who didn't really treat him as a full-blooded Vulcan.
My personal opinion about canon when it comes to new movies versus the old show and movies is when usually take the old movies because I saw them, the old movies and show because I saw them, take them as more canon for the universe, for the original universe. But if there is any new movies that fits with the canon of the old movies, I take it as canon too. So that seems about right too, that he felt at odds.
Interesting that you bring up the alternate reality, basically the alternate original series that was created by J.J. Abrams, because everything happens on an expedited timeline, if you will. So while Kirk, Spock, and McCoy are born at the same time, and I'd say some of them join Starfleet, mainly Spock joins Starfleet around the same time. Kirk and McCoy come into Starfleet a little later than in the original series, but they also, all three of them, become part of the Enterprise crew much earlier. So I think it's 2258 as opposed to 2265 when they take their positions as captain, first officer, and chief medical officer of the Enterprise. So they're actually, I think Kirk is 25 when he is given the captaincy of the Enterprise. Spock is 28 and McCoy is 31. So while their age differences are still the same between the three of them, the timeline is sped up. They're younger.
All right. Yeah.
So what do you think about Spock being a half human, half Vulcan?
I think the series dealt with it very at length. It did it very thoroughly. There is nothing I can say really that wasn't there already. It gives him inner conflict. He feels outside around both Vulcans and humans, and I think he's kind of mad at himself for feeling more at home among humans than among Vulcans, because he decided as a young kid to embrace Vulcan side more than his human side. Then the human side just sweeps him and doesn't let him go.
It does. That's very true. That's actually one of the underlying themes of the original series, I would say, is that Spock, especially in the first season, presents himself as fully Vulcan. But the more he gets involved with the human crew, and especially Kirk, and sometimes McCoy, though McCoy later in, I think, the second and third seasons, you begin to see that he may not react as a traditional Vulcan would react.
And it's funny because Spock became the codifier for what a traditional Vulcan is, because he was the first Vulcan on the show. Every other Vulcan took cues from him.
That's correct. And so Leonard Nimoy, who's playing Spock, was, in a sense, creating what a Vulcan would be as they were filming the original series.
Sure. Yeah, he created all the mannerisms, the behaviors. Early, you can see, because you can see them building over the episodes, but early Spock was more emotional than he is later on.
Yes. That's true. They didn't precisely know how to present this, quote, alien, this non-human. And so I think especially in the pilot, Cage, Spock's characterization is completely different than the way he gets presented in the later episodes in the first season. Yes, it's very strange. Yeah. And he raises his voice, which we all come to know that Spock is a very even-keel, collected, logical being. and keeping his voice at a certain level, you know, outside of, say, raising his voice in alarm to catch someone's attention is part of who he is.
Strange, because parts of the pilot, you know, parts of the cage were incorporated into canon. A lot of people consider the entire episode canon. And it's strange to see how people in the fandom try to, you know, make cohesive why this Spock acts so human in those early years.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
let's just move on to McCoy really quick. So McCoy is... his career starts outside of Starfleet. He's a surgeon, a physician, actually a psychologist, and a xenobiologist.
He's a doctor for everything. Medicine in the 21st century is very advanced, Stacey.
Yes, that's very true. Despite him being, quote, an old-fashioned boy and a old country doctor.
Yeah, but the term old-fashioned is relative to the time. For the 21st century, maybe he is old-fashioned, but for us, futuristic.
So what I know about McCoy is that he actually is on a... He's on the Capella 4 mission. Yes, that is later part of one of the episodes of the original series. McCoy was there for a short period of time before... whatever he was doing there did not work out, and so he ended up transferring to the Enterprise to take over for Dr. Mark Piper under Kirk. But I believe it's well known that Kirk and McCoy actually knew each other before McCoy took the commission on the Enterprise. And so when you see them, and even in some of the first episodes of the series, they act like friends, like old friends, because they are.
Yeah. I think in the first few episodes, the relationship between Kirk and McCoy was more emphasized than one between Kirk and Spock.
Yes, that's true. I have heard that if they had not had a character like Spock and written Spock such that he was going to be very much a part of how Kirk made his command decisions, that the show would have actually been more focused on the Kirk and McCoy friendship than the Kirk and Spock friendship.
Yeah, I have, I found a copy, you probably found it too, of the original guideline book of the series, the original series, where they wrote the notes about the characters and just in general what the series supposed to be like, you know, before they started filming. And the friendship between Kirk and Spock is, Kirk and McCoy is far more emphasized.
You make a very good point, Soda, because this... will take us into talking about Roddenberry's triad, the fact that Kirk and McCoy, the emphasis was on their friendship, but what happened is, because Spock was becoming such a popular character even in the first few episodes of the original series, McCoy's development was actually then backburnered in the first season. And it wasn't until the second season that the writers realized they needed to bring him in more into the scenes because he actually helped balance the group.
I don't know about that because, as I understood it, originally the concept was to have Kirk with a rotating, as a main character, basically, a rotating cast of secondary characters. I didn't mean that the cast... the crew of the Enterprise wouldn't change, but every episode he would go on a mission with different people. And I think McCoy was built to be like his confidant, you know. But because Spock became so popular, the writers decided to give him an elevated spot and he became the main character alongside Kirk. So I think it was so much that McCoy's character development was backburnered. It's just that he wasn't supposed to be a main character in the first place, but he also became slightly less popular than Spock and Kirk, but he also became kind of popular, and so he was he reoccurred more often than other characters, but Spock and Kirk is the most popular characters remained the main characters.
I agree with most of what you said, Soda. What I've read is that the writers and Roddenberry realized at the end of the first season that they needed to bring a more human level to not only balance the group but into the decision making with between basically Kirk's decision making. And so they started to bring McCoy more into the plot, if you will. And so suddenly you had Kirk, Spock, and McCoy more frequently presented in the missions in the second season and third season than before. And I think I read that the writers also realized that the Spock-McCoy dynamic was just really fun because of the way they butted heads. You know, one presenting the emotional argument, one presenting the logical argument. It also had something to do with the fact that the three actors, Shatner, Nimoy, and Kelly, had pretty good chemistry together. Can I read you a quote from Roddenberry? Roddenberry's triad, when he was writing the scripts for the episodes and just overall planning, you know, how these different members of the Enterprise crew were going to interact. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy were written to be basically components of like his own creative worldview, which is why they're separated into Spock representing the more objective, logical point of view. McCoy representing the more emotional, passionate point of view, and then you have Kirk, who is intuitive and sort of the driving force that combines the other two. Roddenberry's actually quoted saying that he designed Kirk, Spock, and McCoy triad to be the dramatic embodiment of the parts of one person, the logic, emotion, and the balance between.
The ego, the id, and the super ego. Yeah.
Yes, that's sort of the psychological equivalent of what they are. I've also heard it said the ethos, logos, and the
Yeah, ethos,
pathos
logos, and
for Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
I heard this quote before. Yes, I think, but I didn't. I don't think he designed. I designed them like that in the first place. I think. Just when they started filming, and they it developed exactly.
I think what I'm trying to say, Soda, is that basically Roddenberry had this idea for Star Trek, but as he continued to write for the series, he just naturally developed these characterizations for Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, such that they were these three different parts that make up a whole.
Yeah, and I think what I was going to say before is that in the third season, the showrunner Roddenberry left, or he was like turned into like a secondary producer that doesn't have very much of a voice on the show or something like that. And you can kind of see the characters went through some sort of flanderization, you know, like their most famous qualities were emphasized. And I think that Spock, because it was so popular, the new showrunner wanted to bring in more rating because the show was about to be canceled and they need more ratings. So because Spock was so popular, he was given basically the limelight. And McCoy basically turned into a little bit of a joke, I think, in many episodes. Like he was angry for no reason. He just started fights with Spock. Because, so maybe they tried to bring him forward, but they didn't do it very well in the third season.
No, they didn't. That's true. I actually think the Spock-McCoy dynamic was much better in the second season. It was clear that the writers had more fun with them in that season than they did. And well, the third season just kind of fell apart anyway.
They were a good episode. There were some exceptions, like The Empath. But Yeah, mostly the third season, I think, it became a little bit of a caricature.
Well, at one point they knew they were not going to continue the series.
Well, yeah, but yeah.
That they were actually on the path to have the series canceled. So, yeah, I agree. So,
Yeah.
Soda, with all that we've been talking about, how Kirk, Spock, and McCoy are characterized, you have one who's more logical, one who's more emotional, and then you have Kirk who seems to strike the balance in between. I can tell you, Soda, that while when I first started watching the original series, I didn't ship Kirk, Spock, and McCoy right away. I was just really, I think I've used the word enamored before, and I think that is a good word for how I felt about these guys. They had something really unique in the way that they interacted.
I'll say
You
that
agree?
when I started watching the, as I said, I was planning on watching this before because the original Star Trek series is very famous. It's kind of one of those classic shows. If you like science fiction, you should probably watch this. And I also knew that, it was the grandmother, well, not the grandmother, maybe the mother of all fandoms, had the first big famous slash ship. Which was Kirk and Spock, or Spurk, or whatever you want to call it. And I was fully expecting to see why people ship Spurk, but I started watching, and while I did realize why people ship Spurk, I started wondering why they're ignoring McCoy because he's so vital to their dynamic. Like, I couldn't really see why it was Spurk that was so popular, and McCoy was just thrown aside because he was so integral to both of these characters.
Exactly. That's exactly how I feel. You put it very well. I started watching the show and I thought, these guys work really well together. And so while at the beginning I thought they had a great friendship and a really good push and pull between each other, it wasn't probably until I finished the in series as a whole, all three seasons, that I thought, why not? Why not ship all three of these guys? And to your point, it never really occurred to me to just say, oh, Kirk and Spock, well, one being the most popular pairing from, that came out of the series, why not just them? Or why not just Spock and McCoy, who clearly have a love-hate relationship going on? It just made sense that it should be Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Watching the series, I saw a lot of similar interaction. A lot of times people ship because of the chemistry and the interactions that seem to imply there is more to it than what we see on screen. And I noticed that a lot of the interactions are very similar, like the same looks they get, that Kirk and Spock give each other, they'll come off McCoy too, but people just don't seem to respond to it as much, I guess.
That's true. They don't really pick up on it. I think Roddenberry even said at one point that he kind of wrote Kirk and Spock to be two halves of a whole. And so some fan thought, oh well, two halves of a whole, well then why aren't they in a romantic or sexual relationship? And then wrote fan fiction. And then that blew up into the fans creating their just a mass of stories about Kirk and Spock, and then making fanzines that they actually, published and mailed to each other over the course of a few decades. So, because of that, partly because of that, and like you said, because of the chemistry and just all the screen time between Kirk and Spock, it was by far the most popular pairing of the show. And McCoy, not having as much screen time and not being as popular as a character, just did not really immediately grab people's attention. So you had the Spurk or the Kirk Spock shippers who were like, this is canon. I mean, that's just how they felt about it. And so if you threw McCoy into that mix, they're like, what are you doing? Well, maybe McCoy's just, the third wheel, or, he's just an added element, especially after the movies. And but then you had on the other side, you had people who liked Spock and McCoy because they had such a explosive chemistry sometimes. But they would never consider putting Kirk in the middle of that because it just didn't seem to work. And yet, not a lot of people seem to think that having a polyamorous relationship between the three of them was actually something that just existed. And it certainly wasn't well balanced because of the preference for Spirk or Kirk and McCoy or Kirk and Spock. So it was just like,
I think the Kirk and McCoy shippers were very few.
Kirk and McCoy, that's a good point about Kirk and McCoy because they had the friendship since the start of the series, right? And they were the most comfortable together, and their dynamic just seemed really natural. And even, when the actors were, on set together, they just seemed to have a natural chemistry. Yet, Kirk McCoy in the original series is sort of the rare pairing.
At least until the new, yeah, in the original series, definitely. I saw search around the new movies. I think if you only look through, let's say, fan fiction websites, only if you could only like thin it to only the new movies, Kirk and McCoy are very, very popular there. I think maybe.
Yes, they are. They are more popular, I would conjecture, than Kirk and Spock. Even though you had some of the fans of the original series sort of shifting into the rebooted series or the rebooted movies and going, oh well, yes, Kirk and Spock, of course I've always shipped that. I'm going to continue shipping that. But
They have to
what
be
happened
together.
was, Kirk and Spock just like butted heads throughout the whole first movie, and actually even into the other movies. And so they actually had more of the explosive, dynamic than that was like Spock and McCoy in the original series. And so it was flipped because you then had Kirk and McCoy, who have basically been close friends throughout their academy years, and they just Yes, they became the most popular pairing of the alternate reality.
Yeah, and also the new series gives Spock a girlfriend, a permanent
Yes,
one.
that too.
A permanent one as opposed to Kirk's
Yeah.
revolving door of girlfriends. Yeah.
I will say Kirk's revolving door of brief relationships
In the
because none
axes.
of them seem to last past the end of the episode.
Yeah. But I think it has something to do in the original series. I think it also might have something to do with DeForest Kelly being like an older actor, and most of the fans of the series are younger people. And I think it's, most younger people prefer to think of other young people in romantic relationships as opposed to older people.
Yes. So let me ask you this, Soda. Knowing that Mix Burke or Kirk, Spock, and McCoy was not that popular from the original series, and also knowing that there was not much dynamic between the three of them in the first and even the second alternate reality movies or the rebooted movies, how do you think Mix Burke has become more popular since the rebooted movies aired?
I think it has something to do with the way fandom is now. I think, well, I wasn't here around the 60s and 70s and 80s, and also was in fandom during the 90s and most of the early 2000s. But I think that back in the early 60s, I mean, back in the, in, not the early 60s, but in the 60s, the homosexuality was still controversial in society. So, people started ship. They weren't the first ship ever. I think there were stories about like people who shipped Sherlock Holmes and Watson back in the 19th century, but you know, they didn't publish fanzines about it, obviously. But I think these days fandom is more open to all kinds of relationships, and to older characters too. So I think that helped.
Thanks, Soda. I believe that wraps up our podcast for today. Join us next time for our second episode, which will be about canon versus fanon. We'll explore character backstories, character traits, both for the original series and the rebooted movies, and which fanon seems more popular than canon.